You are about to enter the courtroom of Judge Jamie Allen. The people are real. The cases are real. The rulings are final. This is Judge Jamie.
Come on, Joe. He's on telly. We don't want to miss him.
Wilma Smith loved watching her grandson, Jamie Allen, every afternoon on his hit TV show, Judge Jamie. Ever since he was a toddler, he'd snuggle up with his nanny, in under the throw, just the two of them, spending hours studying Judge Judy on the telly. And when Judy announced her retirement last year, the television company advertised all around the world for a new judge. And would you believe it, Jamie got the job. Now, he had no qualifications. He was only 7. But he was a very logical little boy. And he had great teachers in Fenner National School, Mr. Duane and Miss Curry. And sure, he'd watched thousands of episodes with his nanny Wilma. He knew how this thing worked. The defendants and the plaintiffs were always terrified when they had to appear before Judge Jamie. Now, it wasn't easy. He still had to go to school in Fenner every day. But he loved going, and he enjoyed playing with his good buddies, Connor and Killian, and then he'd head off to film a new episode of Judge Jamie with the television crew after school. He was the biggest TV star right around the globe. He was big in Japan and Germany, and the Russians couldn't get enough of him. Imagine, a 7-year-old boy from Waterford, so famous. You see, the thing about Judge Jamie was he always kept his cool. Like that episode of the show last week where a painter-decorator was accused of stealing Mrs. Dalton's Waterford crystal lamp when he was painting her house.
Aye, what happened there now, Judge? Didn't I accidentally spill me emulsion primer onto the lampshade? And I knew it was destroyed, so I took it out of the house and put it in my van to save the lady the pain of looking at it.
Jamie wasn't convinced. And what kind of lamp was it exactly, he asked the painter.
Aye, Judge, well, I don't know, because I'm from Donegal. I knows nothing about Waterford crystal. I think it was the 19-inch Inishmore lamp, not to be confused with the Inishear. That's a more delicate cut. Now, that one retails for €1,000. Has a very unique, singular style, timeless design, aesthetic. As I said, I know nothing about it.
Judge Jamie knew this fraudster was telling lies and ordered him to give Mrs. Dalton back the lamp he had stolen from her, which didn't have any paint on it, and to pay her back the money he had charged her to paint her house. Another case closed for Judge Jamie. Well, today's episode of Judge Jamie was turning out to be his toughest case yet. A wealthy American gentleman, Herb Washington, had recently moved to Tremor from upstate New York. He had taken a case against a local man who he was accusing of pointing at him all the time.
When I open my curtains in the morning, he's there, looking at me, laughing at me. When I'm mowing my lawn, walking my dogs, doing my early morning Tai Chi.
Well, where is he today? Why is the accused not here to defend himself? Asked Jamie.
He's too big for his boots, Your Honor. Thinks he can do what he likes. I paid $5 million for that site to build my mansion on. And if he doesn't stop pointing at me, I'll sue him for every cent.
The American man had given a very accurate description of the other man. Dark hair, well turned out in rather old-fashioned clothes of white trousers, a red shirt and a blue jacket. But no sign of him in court today. Jamie had to pause filming. Oh, think. He was usually so good at solving the cases and knowing who was in the right and the wrong. He adjourned his court so that he could go home and have a think about it. Judge Jamie barely slept a wink. He was thinking about it so much. Who could it be? Early next morning, he set off around Tremor for a walk with his dog Rex to see if he could spot this pointing man. And sure enough, as he came by Herb Washington's mega mansion up by Newtown Cove, he saw the problem with his own two eyes. In his courtroom later that afternoon, Judge Jamie opened his school bag and took out his history book and a pair of glasses. He ordered Herb to read the local history chapter.
Whoa, Your Honour! It says in this book there's a big 14-foot friendly giant guy close to where I live. Whoa, I can't wait to go see this.
Yes, Herb. We call him the Metal Man.
Oh, and before you go, you'll be needing these, said Jamie, as he gave the American man a pair of glasses. I'm off to play on my PS4.
Case dismissed.
Until the next episode of Judge Jamie, goodbye.
Lads, I
bought the new Spider-Man game. I got 4 slushies with my money. I bought a new Fortnite Brawlers kit.
Dyke sighed as he listened to his friends boast about what they'd bought with their money yet again. Every morning in the schoolyard, it was the same lately. Now that Tyke was in first class and most of the children were starting to lose their baby teeth, they'd come into school with tales of the Tooth Fairy coming to visit them the night before. Some of his friends even reported hearing the fluttering of wings in the middle of the night, and then they'd wake up to a shiny €2 coin under their pillow. By now, everyone in first class had lost at least 3 teeth. Everyone except Tyke. That was. There wasn't a budge out of his pearly whites. Not a wonky incisor or loose canine in sight. Part of the problem was Tyke's nanny. Nanny Pearl minded Tyke when his parents were working. She was a bit old-fashioned, was Pearl, and this was really obvious when it came to the dinners she cooked. Bacon and cabbage, chucks, skirts and kidneys, drisheen, fried liver. You've probably never heard of any of these. Nanny Pearl was also in charge of school lunches. It was all brown bread with tomatoes, a flask of milk and an apple every single day. No wonder his teeth weren't falling out. Oh, how Tyke longed for a few Maum sweets.
Night now, Tyke. Don't forget now to say your prayers and brush your teeth. Good young fella.
Nanny was putting Tyke to bed early, 6:30, so she could settle in and watch old reruns of Heartbeat. Tyke couldn't sleep, though. He tiptoed downstairs to get himself a drink when he noticed Nanny Pearl fast asleep in front of the telly. Poor Nanny. I put a blanket over her. But then he spotted something else. And his kind thoughts became, well, not so kind. There, on the arm of the sofa, beside his sleeping nanny, were her pearly whites. Her choppers. Her false teeth. He reached over to lift Nanny's teeth using the sleeve of his pyjamas. Ugh. 30, 31, 32, yep. And at €2 a tooth, that makes €64 from the Tooth Fairy. If Tyke could follow through with his cunning plan. He carefully brushed the false teeth and popped them under his pillow. All night he tossed and he turned. Was he doing the right thing? He couldn't go through with it. He knew he had made a bad choice. He decided there and then, lying in his little bed, that he'd return Nanny's teeth. But hang on, the radio? Talking? It's morning already?
This is WLR News.
Some breaking news on WLR this morning, Ollie and Mary. Gardaí are appealing to the public in Waterford to be on high alert after baddies stole a set of false teeth from an elderly lady in Dunmore East. Nanny Pearl's teeth were taken between the hours of 7pm and midnight last night, and Gardaí say the thieves may try to sell them to a member of the public. 100 members of the Organised Crime Bureau have been deployed and are currently at the scene looking for the false teeth. Anyone with information is asked to come forward, and Nanny Pearl herself is offering a reward of 10 packets of Matcha Tax Extra. Damien Tiernan will have more on this on Data Today shortly, and we'll keep you updated on any developments as they happen. Aoife Kearns, WLR News.
Oh no! Tyke lifted up his pillow to retrieve the teeth. They were gone! He bolted down the stairs and into the kitchen where his parents and Nanny Pearl were sitting at the table. It was me. I took the teeth. I just wanted to buy stuff like all my friends. I never meant for all of this to happen. I was going to buy you new ones for Christmas, and now the guards are here. And where are the guards?
Are you all right, Tyke?
Asked Nanny.
What are you talking about, young fella?
But Tyke just stared back at her mouth. There they were, all 32 of her glorious pearly whites back in place. How? By the time he got to school, Tyke didn't even mind hearing about what all his friends were buying with their Tooth Fairy money. He was just glad not to be in jail, locked up, a notorious tooth-stealing criminal. At lunchtime, he opened up his lunchbox to find jam sandwiches, a slab of toffee with a mini hammer to crack it, and extra sugary, sugary fizzy orange. Wow, thanks, Nanny. He bit and chewed into the delicious toffee, and then crunch. His two front teeth came right out. Tyke couldn't wait to go to bed that night. 2 teeth! He'd be as rich as one of those YouTubers in the morning. Thanks for the toffee, Nanny. It really helped to make my teeth finally come out.
Toffee? I didn't give you a toffee. What are you talking about, bye?
Said Pearl.
Come think of it. Thank you for putting me false teeth carefully under me pillow last night. But you forgot your little note, Tyke.
Note? Tyke opened the piece of paper. Written in the teeniest writing you've ever seen.
I remember a little girl. In fact, she was your Nanny Pearl. 32 times I took her teeth, lifted her pillow, left money beneath. Your teeth are white, your teeth are strong. Be proud, these choppers to you belong. They'll fall out when the time is right. Two's enough for now. I'll collect them tonight. The Tooth Fairy. P.S. I hope you like the toffee.
Ah yes, the click of a pen. Biro. A quill. You might think that everybody writes in pen when they're older, but let me tell you, it's not as straightforward as that, as Amelia Kerwin knows only too well. Oh, for months now, 8-year-old Amelia had been working so hard to secure her pen license. Yep, that's what you need these days. Like, you can't drive a car without a driving license, and you simply cannot use a pen without a pen license. Same difference. Amelia's been practicing her handwriting ever so neatly with her pencil, her crayons, her colouring pencils, her markers. Oh, how she longed for ink and a Bic biro to hold in her hand. She wanted it for two reasons, you see. Number one, well, it's a pen license. I mean, how cool is that? And number two, she needed it for her line of duty outside of her schoolwork. She's flat to the mat most days, doing arts and crafts with her nanny Kathy, playing with Stella and Sophie, her two little sisters, minding her hens and her pet cat George, and making her own YouTube videos. But along with all of this, Amelia's most important job is as an undercover officer for AD12. That's anti-destruction in and around Waterford, to you and me. Now, by anti-destruction, I mean she's against anyone destroying the beautiful county where she lives. Amelia would catch people in the act, polluting the environment, throwing away their litter, illegal dumping, and lately, scratching tree barks all around the place. I mean, who would even do that? Big circle scratches in loads of trees all around the county that leave a mark looking like the letter O. She'd jot everything down in her AD12 notebook and pass it on to the government. Yes, Amelia Kerwin was big noise in headquarters. Now, nobody knows she's a UCO. That's an undercover officer, remember? Except her good friends, Leah and Adam. And since Amelia got her new wheels with her birthday money, black and pink roller skates, she's been unstoppable covering every area of the county. From Tallow to Passage, Ardkeen to Ardmore, she'd whiz around in the evenings with George, her pet cat, tucked into her school bag on her back. But for the last week, everywhere Amelia and George go, the trees were destroyed. Those strange scratched circles in the letter O. Was O a person? Amelia would have to find out. Top of her suspect list were the big Breakfast Blah presenters from WLR, Oliver with an O, Carol, and the more obvious, Mary O'Neill. Only last week, Amelia had seen Ollie sitting under a tree in Ferrybank playing a ukulele, looking very suspicious.
Ah, how'd you wished. I didn't float up the shore in a bubble.
And as for Mary, she'd seen her throw her bike up against a tree out on the greenway, hopping on an electric scooter to finish her journey.
Whee! Now we're sucking diesel. I'm going like the clappers.
Maybe the bike pedal was doing the damage every time Mary abandoned her bike. Or maybe Ollie was up to something odd and he was O. Then again, Amelia couldn't rule out her own principal, Mr. O. Byrne. Why? Well, because there's an O in his name, of course. All three were top of the suspect list. Oh, if only she had a pen license, the list would look more professional. Maybe Mr. O'Byrne didn't want her to get a pen license because then he could rub out his name from the list if it was written in pencil. Maybe he was O. Amelia had sent word to the government and all three suspects were brought in for interview.
Mother of God, what's all this about?
Asked Ollie, a little surprised to be there.
There's only one thing I'm interested in, and that's getting back to WLR,
replied Mary O'Neill. Sorry, Amelia, mate, said Mr. O'Byrne, but none of us marked the trees. None of us are the O that you're looking for.
Well said, fella,
said Ollie. Well, hang on. What was that noise? There, again. Scratching.
As they turned around, Amelia caught the suspect in the act. Another O had been scratched, this time into the wallpaper, there in the interview room. And all along was the culprit doing it. O, hiding in broad daylight. Except O was G, George the cat. Sorry, it happens like that sometimes when you get to the finale. Every time he'd come along in Amelia's rucksack, George had hopped out to scratch his claws, in a rather unusual pattern, it has to be said. Before he left, Mr. O'Byrne took one last look at Amelia's suspect list, and then he reached into his briefcase and produced a piece of paper. Was it? Yes? A license! A pen license! Finally! No more scratching the letter O. Do you hear me now, George? Said Amelia. You're on my team, and the only letter I'm interested in is the letter of the law. And now, I'll be writing those letters with my new blue pen.
He's different. He seems to have extra long ears. I mean, they'd trip him up if nothing else. I will not allow him in my army.
Baroque felt very small and embarrassed. He wanted to hop off the stage and cry. He looked up at Princess Kriya, but she was smiling at him. She took back her microphone and then ever so calmly she announced, "People of Lismore and Waterford, I present to you the very kindest and huggiest knight of them all, Baroque." Yes, he's different from all the other knights, but that's what makes him Baroque. Yes, he has extra long ears, but being born with anything extra is a gift. Baroque came to me from the Ronald MacDonald House, and he's been by my side since I was very little. His name means hug, and you wouldn't believe the power of his hugs. And yes, General Lucas, he has a heart, a very big one. And I should know, my name, Kriya, means heart, after all. And when I was a little baby, all the best doctors in the land came to see my heart because it was so kind and loving and extra special. The people of the kingdom listened to her every word. General Lucas had never really looked at Baroque in that way before. But he hadn't time to think because suddenly the castle was under attack from the Ballyduff brutes. They were flinging tomatoes and Brussels sprouts and boiled eggs over the castle wall. "Attack them!" roared General Lucas. "No," said Kriya. "Open the gates and let them in. We're having a party. Let's share what we have with them." Everybody loves a wedding. A good old knees up, letting your hair down and celebrating as the happy couple say, "I do." Except when they say, "I don't," or "I won't." Did you know that the most famous wedding in Waterford very nearly didn't happen?
Aoife, girl, they're all waiting. What am I going to tell them?
Tell them whatever you like, Richie. I genuinely cannot believe you'd pull a stroke like this. And Daddy knew about it?
I thought you'd be delighted that I went on Don't Tell the Bride. Sure, it's after paying for the wedding itself. We'll be off to bed in Medina for the honeymoon with thousands in our back pockets. And your feathers after giving us a deposit for a house in Cherrymount.
I don't care about deposits and holidays. I'm used to them. I moved down from Leinster to marry you, Richie. Daddy said you were the best guy to marry and that our wedding photographs would be splashed all over the celebrity magazines. I was genuinely expecting, like, a famous singer, a magician, great food, like a prize racehorse to carry me down the quay. Do you even know how high the heels are on my Jimmy Choos? My shoes, Richie. And you expect me to be able to go up and down that spiral staircase in the reg? I break my neck. I am not getting married there. Now my HD eyebrows are nearly ready and you have 1 hour to get this sorted or else the wedding is off. Oh dear, Richie was in the doghouse again. It was the 25th of August, 1170. What was supposed to be the happiest day of his life. How was he to know about all those stairs in Reginald's Tower? The Reg, as it was commonly known. Richie was new to Waterford and he thought booking his wedding and reception there was a great idea. He even advertised it on WLR, inviting everyone in the county to come. Oh, what a great way to make new friends. But now she didn't want to get married there and he'd kind of forgotten to book all the other glitzy important things that his girlfriend Aoife really wanted. Well, at least the advertising worked.